Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Training and Tactics Talk on RadioFirehouse.com. It's a great day to be at the Southeastern Association of Fire Chiefs. We're going to interview a group of folks today when we talk about training and tactics, and of course we're going to hit on training today, especially talking to chiefs and taking a view of what they want and what they vision for the future of training and some of the components or gaps that they identify. And joining me in the first session here is Darren Pat Wilson, Assistant Chief with Johns Creek Fire Department down in Georgia. Also have with me Daryl Smith, who is a battalion commander with the Sandy Springs, Georgia Fire Department. So, guys, welcome on board to Training and Tactics Talk. It's great to have you. I'm glad I kind of corralled you up. Pat, I'm going to go to you first, Chief, and tell me, you know, from your role, I know you're really engaged. I know that you just are passionate about training, about the excellence in the fire service, ways to make an organization, you know, outstanding, moving them to the next level. So tell me, and I'm going to hand you the microphone, tell me what you think it's going to take or what the gaps are to get us to that level of outstanding.
You know, Doug, I tell you, it's been a challenge over the years, you know, as far as getting folks involved with training. And, I think, I think it's going to start with great leadership, you know, from the fire chief level all the way down to our bottom-ranked folks. And we have to become more engaged. We have to promote it. I know from our organization, training was the first thing we talked about. As we were building the department out, we talked about ensuring that our folks had an opportunity to go out and train. We stopped the part of penalizing folks for training. And I think a lot of places over the years have been in that mindset, you know, as far as when you talk about training, it's a penalty. You know, that's, we don't want to spend any overtime. We don't want to spend any extra money. And, you know, if they want to take off, you know, we're going to make them take their own time. And I think we got to change that focus from the leadership end, get out of the old standards that we've done as far as laying it out and penalizing people for doing training, in my opinion. And I think that's what's really hurt us over the years.
That's definitely true. A lot of folks have used punitive efforts and used training as that punishment, and that's definitely not the right case. And, of course, you know, when you talk about getting in that mindset and getting engaged, who better than a guy to the battalion level that's definitely focused on groups of people, who sees them on a day-to-day basis when they're engaged, when he's actually commanding incidents, who's right in the trenches truly still. And that's the great part. So Chief, as a battalion commander, somebody that's engaged with these people, let's talk a little bit about some of the gaps that you see when you're out in the field. And I know that you work with a variety of organizations, especially in the area that you're at and where the department is located in Georgia, in a metro-type region. Let's talk about some gaps in training and some things that you see from your perspective and how we're going to fix those gaps.
All right, first I think the biggest gap is getting your people involved. And if you can get them involved, they'll actually look forward to it. And just like Chief Wilson said, you don't punish them for training. It's an encouragement kind of tool. And the gap that I see is when you've got company officers that are not willing to participate. And it all starts in the stations and also at the battalion level. And me personally, I get my hands dirty with them when they're training. I fully believe that you practice like you want to play, and play like you're going to practice, play like you practice. And if you got gaps there, it's definitely going to show up. And in order to be the best you can be on the fire ground or whatever emergency scenario you've got going on, I think you need to be prepared. And if you got gaps there, I think that's why our LODDs are still going up.
That's a good point. You talked about the company officer, and of course most folks know I'm very passionate about the company officers, and most people don't realize in the fire service when we look at the organizational structure, this group of people that are the company leaders, as we will say, are the true trainers in the fire service. And in fact, they're the most pivotal role in the fire service in making things happen. You know, Chief Wilson, I know you and I talked just the other night when the conference here began, you know, with the Southeast Chiefs, and we were talking about company officers and that engagement. I want you to talk a little bit about some of the things that you were telling me as we engaged in that, because I think it's critical that our people understand just how much of a training role they have and how much of a true leader and trainer they are in the fire service.
Absolutely. The company officer is critical. You know, and I told my folks, I was out at some fire stations over the last several days visiting, and I told my company officers or captains, I said, guys, you have more power and authority than I will ever think about having. And this is what Chris, Doug and I were talking about the other night, that the company officer does have a lot of responsibility, have all the authority, and it's on them. And I think at that level, it can make or break an organization. And bottom line, you know, when you have company commanders that have poor attitudes or have a poor attitude about training, and we allow this person to continue to downplay their role, it destroys the organization. You know, and eventually we will end up in a sad situation, a LODD or some other thing, because that company commander who does not engage their people in the right way. And bottom line, they are going to influence them, whether it's positive or whether it's negative. They have the influence, they have the power, and it's going to be up to them. And we have to, as battalion commanders, as assistant fire chiefs, provide good education, good training for the company commander. And one of the efforts we have in our organization is really focusing on the company officer. I think that's critical, and that's the place where it makes or breaks the organization.
Well, guys, thank you for joining me. We're going to be talking with some other guests. Joining me currently is Chris Aponte. He was a chief at Harrods Creek Fire Protection District right here in the great state of Kentucky. And we're going to talk a little bit about training again. And he's going to tell us in his vision as when he was retiring, some of the things that he was seeing or issues he was running up against with training and the philosophies that's out there. And I'm not going to steal the thunder, Chief. You know, go ahead and jump in and talk a little bit about the problems that you were seeing and how we need to be balanced in our training.
Well, thanks a lot for the opportunity. You know, some of the things that, and I guess it really depends upon what your department offers in terms of services. But for us, we offered all sorts of services. Water rescue. We were part of a Metro Urban Search and Rescue team. We have guys who are paramedics now. They're all these things. And what one of the struggles we had was that we trained so much on those specialty rescue things to be good, and we have to do that. But what happened is the fire training has fallen off to the side. So we're actually specialty rescue guys, and we did every now and then train on fire. So what one of the things that has always been, and I'm old school, I mean, one of the things that has always been important to me is just the basics of firefighting, to make sure that, you know, you meet those minimum standards, that you can lay the hose, that you can, that you know how to use the safety devices on your SCBA when you get in trouble. So all those things need to be automatic. And I think sometimes we get a little complacent and we want to train on the fun stuff and not on the stuff that is more mundane. So I think that's one of the things that we were working on, and one of the things I identified as an issue before I retired. But and I understand that. I mean, as a young firefighter, that's what I wanted to do, is the fun stuff, you know, the jaws of life, you know, the firefighting stuff. I had that down. Don't worry about it. And I think that you have to get that muscle memory and all those things that become automatic that you don't have to think about.
And I agree. That's very important. And one of the things of getting what I will call the balance in training is very difficult, especially for training officers and company officers, because it's, of course, you want to do the fun stuff. You want to go in the high profile, as we call it. But again, that foundation that we had when we came out of the academies, when we first got on to the rigs riding, is very important. And it goes back to, as you called it, the basics or the foundation of what our job is. And we know that we're not running as many fires, but our deaths haven't gone down. And that's something we talked about a little bit in the first part with some other chiefs. And how do you get balance? As a chief, I know you're sitting there and you run from what I call the toilet plunger syndrome. You know, have all these toilet plungers of things, you know, the bugles. And there's so many things that we've got to get done from a chief perspective. How do we get balance in the organization, especially with training? And how do we get our people to see the need for balance?
Wow, well, that is a tough one, because you know, one of the things that we found was we have a requirement that every single shift that you have to have training, and typically it's about 2 hours of training. Well, balancing that between what you have to have as minimums for everything from, you know, hazardous materials recertification and all the medical stuff that you have to do and all those other specialty things, finding that balance was really, really tough. And I think what, you know, obviously you want to turn this over to your training person, and you hope you've delegated it to someone who's the magical person that can get all that done and allow them to do that. But what we did was, you know, looked at those things and in trying to get the buy-in from the guys to show the importance of it. And one of the things that we did was through the minimum standards is that you have to perform these minimum standards in terms of evolutions and things like that. And I think some of the guys actually then were able to see where they were a little bit deficient. And obviously your captain, the guy who's on the line is the most important person in this scenario to keep the guys motivated, to keep them interested in training, and to actually spur them to participate in training, and also to assess the needs of his guys and what they need to train on. So, but you know, it is a balancing, and I'm not so sure that we achieve that perfection that you're looking for. You know, the ISO calls for us to get 20 hours of fire training every month, and that's impossible. We just can't do that. So with all the other things that we have to do. So, but integrating all that in, having someone who sets up the agenda, sets up the schedule, and that you can delegate that to the great training officer, and that really helps a lot.
Well, you hit a definite point there that's critical to the fire service, and that's ISO. And a little bit of this is when your training officers get involved and your company officers are working from a company level, is truly understanding what ISO is looking for. Looking for that 2 hours a day in fire service related training, which is 1001. However, if you really dive into 1001 and that's what they're looking at, there's some rescue components there. There's medical components that tie into that. So there's a lot of things that we look at, and this does help make some of that balance. But we also can't forget some of the other critical parts and balance, and that's our drivers and especially our company officers. I think we do an outstanding job, and we've done this through the years, of training our firefighters and making them top-notch. I mean, we're probably as good at service delivery as anybody in an industry is when it comes to service. The other side of the fence is we probably work really, really hard on our drivers as well, because that's critical. And there's a lot of liability that goes with operating some of our apparatus, and our rigs have gotten bigger and more complex. The area that we've fallen off, and I talked with Chief Wilson from down in Georgia earlier about, you know, company officers and how critical they are. And we're going to come up a few states in the eastern part of the United States here, the southeast, and in Kentucky. Are you seeing a gap with how strong your company officers are? And do we need a strong push or focus in developing company officers to a new level?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that we did when we've been doing for the last year or so is we actually hired a gentleman who works with our officers to assess them, help assess themselves, and then really work on building those officers in terms of understanding what their roles and responsibilities are. And it's a heavy burden, because, you know, you're responsible for that entire company, but you're also responsible for all those people you serve. And you have to motivate, you have to facilitate, you have to make sure that people are doing the things that they don't want to do sometimes and still be, you know, accepted as their leader. And so we were working on officer training from the chief down, everybody, and it absolutely is important. The company officer sets the tone for what the company does, but also really what the department does. One of the things that we identified is we had, you know, obviously there's certain captains that stand out and certain captains that, you know, maybe are not as aggressive at training. And we had one of our captains who actually would ask to go do specific trainings with his guys. And, oh, absolutely, you encouraged them to do that. And we actually found one of some of the crew members that worked with him that then got transferred to other slots. Asked, well, why can't we train? And we asked, well, why isn't your captain bringing you in the training? So they actually were a little frustrated with their captain that he wasn't training with them, because they came from a platoon that the captain was very aggressive with training and said, hey, guys, we're going to train. We're really going to train. We're not going to pencil whip this. We're really going to go out and do it. And that's so important. It's so important that for that buy-in from the captain, the buy-in his responsibility to mentor and to teach and to facilitate the training for these guys. And that's what's going to save their lives. It's going to save our people. And as you said, the service delivery, it keeps that at the top-notch level.
Well, thank you, Chief Aponte, for joining us today. I think you bring a light and a support to the company officer development to really fire training in itself. For those folks that are looking at some officer development or staying on the cutting edge and seeing some of the concepts, www.thecompanyofficer.com is a great site to go check out. Chief, thank you again for being on. And joining me now is Kelly Gordon, Assistant Chief from the Montgomery Fire and Rescue Department down in Alabama. As we've talked earlier, we've talked how important training is. We've taken a perspective in talking to chiefs so that we can kind of disseminate this out to lay some groundwork for what people in the field may not understand about visions or thought processes. Montgomery, Alabama is going through, you know, a change now, I guess, in how their department's operating and doing some things. They're adding some specialty areas. And part of what I want the chief here to talk about is what it takes, one, to specialize some folks, especially from a training perspective, into being instructors and being able to come back and be in that role where they develop others. So, Chief, tell us what you're doing.
Absolutely. We have a program in process now to develop a dive rescue slash recovery team, as well as a swift water rescue recovery team. They're both very detailed, and it takes a lot of training to get one to the expert level to train the individuals in our department. We have three individuals, including myself, that have went to 9 separate dive classes through Dive Rescue International to become experts or instructors so that we can instruct our department and develop a team in dive rescue. The previous 2 weeks, I have come back from a swift water course where I gained the certification of dive rescue, or correction, swift water instructor, as well as 2 other individuals in our department. And our intent is to come back and teach our department as many of the individuals as we can in dive rescue as well as swift water rescue. In doing this, over the past year, we have trained 39 individuals in scuba diving and Dive Rescue 1 qualifications. And there's a lot of activities that involve that. A skill qualification where we have to go out and do a swim test, which it's an extensive swim test. Then we have to take them through their basic scuba skills. And after that course, which is the basic, just to teach them how to scuba dive, then we have to teach them the Dive Rescue 1, which teaches them how to actually go out and search for bodies or evidence of something of that nature. So it's quite extensive, and it takes a good bit of time to get them up to the expert level. The dive rescue, or should I say the swift water rescue, we are just now implementing it, and we're going to take the ones that we have as public safety divers, and we're going to cross them over into the swift water rescue as well. And it will take us approximately a year to a year and a half to get all of that done. So it's a detailed process that actually does take some time.
Well, with all the specialty training that y'all are going through, and I know that it's the need to continue your fire training and keep a balance between that, between what other rescue activities you have going, emergency medical, maintaining all the things you have for ISO. How are you dealing with this? What are some of the plans that you have in place to ensure that you have a balance?
One of the things that we do, which is very good for our employees as far as we have a great fire department, we put out a letter asking anyone for volunteers to volunteer for these teams. And when they volunteer, we supply the training and they volunteer for it. So what they will do is they will come on their off days and actually take this training so that we're not having to spend the money as far as employees to train these individuals. And it's a partnership between them and us. We will train them at no cost, and then they will come to the training sessions without us having to pay them overtime for it.
So how's this working? Have you had good support from the organization, from the people themselves, from the union, from all those components that fit in there? And how's all this going and fitting into the organization as it grows?
Absolutely. We're getting cooperation from both the administration to include the mayor as well as the firefighters. And to be specific, our union president is in charge of the dive rescue team.
Well, that's important. And one of the things when we talk about training is really understanding the it's not an us and them thing. It's about service delivery. It's about getting training for our people so that they're safe, so that they can perform effectively, and to meet the vision and the mission of the organization, protecting the community it serves. So, Chief, I think you've done a great job. I appreciate you joining us. And keep working hard down in Montgomery, and we look forward to the Southeast Chiefs. They will be in Montgomery, Alabama next summer in June for the 83rd Leadership Conference. So if you're listening, you want a great opportunity to come down and get some great education, enjoy the Montgomery, Alabama area, take an opportunity to join the Southeast Chiefs 83rd Leadership Conference there. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.